know that, like, when you're in downtown Knoxville, when you're on Gay Street, like, you're actually like a story above where the original Gay Street was?
Yes, because if you're in the basement of my office,
yeah,
our corporate headquarters,
there's windows.
No, you can go out a door.
Stop.
And look up, and you're looking at the sidewalk.
That is so freaking cool.
So I probably just derailed your whole story.
No, no,
you didn't
no.
expect me to know.
No, it's awesome.
It's like Chicago, too, because...
It's so exciting.
When you're walking down Michigan Avenue, you're...
You're on, like, the second one that they built?
Yeah.
It's so cool.
Like, yeah.
It just makes you think, like, okay, what crazy stories and mysteries happened underneath this in the original Gay Street?
Probably all terrible things. They're like, we just got to build over it and cover it up.
Just make a new one.
Knoxville is in the South. It's probably bad news.
Well, yeah. So Tom, one of the people that Tom loves so much is a guy who had a huge influence on kind of the spiritual history of Knoxville back in the day.
Yeah.
And like in the early 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it was like right down there in that area. And the thing that I was wondering was that down on the original Gay Street? But we have a guest today, Tom Job.
I literally just looked around. I forgot that we were
not right now in this moment.
I was like, oof.
We have a guest on Ancient and New today, and it's Tom Job, and he's going to tell some really amazing stories about a guy called Robert Bateman. And you know, it's if you ever hang out with Tom when he's like gets going on some person that you've never heard of that he loves a lot, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and then he'll give you a look like, oh, you've never heard of this guy from the 19th century.
Whenever he asks Thomas if Thomas has seen a movie, and then if Thomas says no.
You've never seen...
Life is Beautiful.
Life is Beautiful?
And he's so scandalized and offended. It's fantastic. So we invited Tom to tell us a story about old Knoxville, a story about the spiritual history of just a really, really amazing person. And it winds up going in these cool directions. We think you're going to love it.
I'm excited.
Welcome.
I haven't listened to it yet. So I'm really excited.
Yeah. Welcome to Ancient and New.
Welcome.
And here comes Tom Job.
So I bought this book on the history of Knoxville, and I have been geeking out on it ever since then. It tells you about everywhere. Like, I took my grandkids to Iams Nature Center. Iams Nature Center was named for Henry Pearl with an E, Iam, who was an ornithologist who died like in 1920-something. And in the visitor center, there is a stuffed pair of ivory-throated woodpeckers, which is extremely rare because they're extinct. And it says on the sign that no one really knows where they came from. But my book said they were donated in memory of James and Nancy Tanner by a friend because she was the last person to ever see a living pair of ivory-throated woodpeckers, which I'm thinking, I hope it wasn't this pair. Like maybe they were up in a duck blind with his friend and he took aim and she said, wait a minute, that's not a duck. And then they're gone. So, but one of my favorites, buildings in Knoxville. It's not really talked about in this book, but if you walk to the end of Cumberland Avenue, which Cumberland Avenue continues through the UT campus, across Henley Street, across Gay Street, and then it goes down the hill. And at the bottom of the hill, when you're almost to the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame, there's a little A-frame building. And there's a little sign on it that said at one time it was a Romanian church. But before that, it was called the People's Tabernacle. And it was started by an English minister named Robert Bateman. Robert Bateman was a Wesleyan minister who came to Knoxville to be an urban missionary. There's an old Knoxville city directory in the East Tennessee History Center that first listed him as a resident of Knoxville in 1898. And it said he lived at 1005 Highland Avenue, where the Knoxville Museum of Art parking lot is today. But Robert Bateman was a person who was just full. He was full of the love of Jesus. He was full of love. He was full of joy. He was full of enthusiasm. He was just one of those people that I want to be like when I grow up. He lived in Knoxville until 1901. And then in 1901, he moved to Baltimore to do the same kind of work. One time in Baltimore, he conducted a service where he told a lot of people about Jesus and asked people who wanted to accept Jesus to come forward. And only three boys came forward. But one of those boys was E. Stanley Jones, who was one of the greatest missionary statesmen and missionary scholars that ever came out of the United States. He was the author of a lot of books about reaching people for Christ in China. And in his autobiography, A Song of Ascents, E. Stanley Jones described Robert Bateman. Through his rough exterior, I saw that there was reality within. He was a converted alcoholic, and he was on fire with God's love. And I said to myself, I want what he has. I've always felt that way in my life about certain people. When I was in high school, I went to a Billy Graham, what they used to call an evangelistic crusade back in those days in the 1960s, because I was trying to find Jesus. And there was a woman there who sang at all of his meetings before he would get up to preach. And I didn't know anything about her. Her name was Ethel Waters, and I didn't know that she was the first African-American woman to ever receive a Tony Award for her performance on Broadway. All I knew was that she had something, and I wanted it. She was so joyful, and she just seemed like she was full of love, and I wanted that. I had a man who really kind of taught me about how to be a pastor. His name was Charles Stuckey. I always called him Pastor Stuckey. But he had been a train hobo and an alcoholic, and he accepted Jesus in a rescue mission in Washington, D.C. when he was about 30, 31, I think. And I knew him when he was in his 70s, and he was so sweet. And he was so full of kindness, and he was so full of joy, and he was so full of love. He was just full of these. And I always said to myself, I want that. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but I want that. I think I would have felt that way. I kind of do feel that way about Robert Bateman. He moved from Baltimore to Jacksonville, Florida. And Jacksonville, during the first decade of the 20th century, was a major railroad line and a shipping port. Over 500 steamships docked in Jacksonville, Florida every year. And nearly 100 trains stopped there every week. And it attracted all kinds of people. It attracted people who were broken, and it attracted people who weren't. There were mobs of sailors, railroad workers, hobos, prostitutes, gamblers, bankers, tourists in front of lavish resort hotels. It had a reputation for health spas for tuberculosis patients, and they came from all over the country. But after they had spent all their savings, they would wind up sleeping in the street. There were railroad cars that were kind of decked out as rolling palaces, vacation homes for super wealthy northerners who were passing through the city. But in nearby train yards, there were loads of homeless people, and sometimes whole families of poor people who slept in and under boxcars. Jacksonville had the Florida Ostrich Farm, and it drew tourists from all over the country because they wanted to see Oliver W. Oliver, the world's fastest bird. It was the home of the Dixieland Park, which was kind of the Dollywood of its day, which opened in 1907. There were opera performances, theatrical performances. It was kind of a Branson, Missouri, really. Buffalo Bill's Wild West Show considered Jacksonville their winter quarters. It was a time when there were like motor cars, street cars, and teams of horses in the same streets, and it caused traffic problems that were new for everyone. In 1908, there was a traffic accident that involved a horse, a bicycle, and a camel. along the one of the main streets, Bay Street, which was really the main street through the town, there would be people selling live alligators, poached plumage from exotic birds, shark teeth carved into whistles. But on the outside of Jacksonville, there were shanty towns and dusty barns and makeshift arenas where crowds of sweaty people gambled away all their pay on prize fights, rat fights, rooster fights, dog fights. They would chain up bears and have dogs fight with them. And there were rows of open houses of prostitution along the streets of a section of town that was called the Villa. It was that part of town. There were very few women who worked there by choice. Many were there because of their lack of education and economic opportunities. Circumstances forced them to work there. There were women who had been kidnapped. There were women who were sold as slaves. Robert Bateman chose to work in the Villa. One newspaper said, "That man distributes more human sunshine than anybody else who has ever lived in Jacksonville." One monthly report from the mission that he started said that in that particular month, they had served 1,284 meals to hungry people. He took in 836 homeless men for the night. He found jobs for 182 men. He helped 5 wayward girls escape the houses of prostitution. He found homes for 4 orphan boys, and he took care of 3 babies that desperate mothers had abandoned on the steps of the mission. He wrote, "The object of my work is to visit the sick, to visit the jail, to visit the workhouse, to visit the hospital, to feed the poor, to clothe the needy, to hold nightly meetings, to provide a home for fallen girls, to help restore lost relatives, and to send the wanderer home." He would do anything to reach out to people. One time he had a street carnival in front of his mission to get people to come inside. And the promotion featured Paduano's Royal Italian Concert Band, Princess Olga, the daintiest, smallest woman in public life, Thompson's Wild West Show, and one giant octopus. He was the most popular man in the city of Jacksonville. Theodore Roosevelt invited him to the White House to talk about it. One paper said he went about doing good. He gathered in the sin-scarred brood, the poor broken ones, the penniless, the homeless, the helpless, the hungry, those in rags. He housed the homeless, he fed the hungry, he clothed the naked, and he helped the helpless to help themselves. One day he got a letter at the mission from a prostitute. It said, "Dear Dr. Bateman, I hear that you're going to start a home for us girls. I want to come to it. I can't do anything that is worth anything to anybody. I have tried to leave here, but nobody will give me work. This place is terrible, and I know lots of girls will come. For God's sake, do something quick." Signed from a certain house on Davis Street. Robert Bateman had been born in Bristol, England. And there was a man named George Mueller who had established homes for he eventually raised over 10,000 orphans. It was an orphanage that functioned without any fundraising because all of the money that he needed for the Mueller homes, he got through prayer alone. So Robert Bateman decided that he wanted to travel to England to learn more about Mueller's work so that he could open a house for women who wanted to leave prostitution and sex slavery. A newspaper wrote about his trip and said, "Dr. Bateman has been making a tour of study and observation in England for the purpose of familiarizing himself with the best methods of lifting fallen humanity." He was just a popular person wherever he went because he was so full of love and enthusiasm and joy, and he got lots of invitations to preach when he was in Bristol. And he always closed the service with his favorite hymn, "Nearer My God to Thee." His preaching was so popular that when he left Bristol to come back to Jacksonville and opened his home, a band played that same hymn, escorting him and his sister, Mrs. Ida Ball, to the train that took them to to their ship. Crowds stood in front of the house. They cheered him when he came out. And great big men broke down and sobbed like little children when he said goodbye. As he went to board the ship, it was the heaviest moving object ever made by man. The world's largest and most luxurious ship, 882 feet long. It weighed 46,328 tons. It carried 2,207 people. And this was her maiden voyage, the maiden voyage of the Titanic. They said that first class passengers on that ship, on the Titanic, were estimated to have a personal worth of over $500 million. With her numerous watertight compartments, she is absolutely unsinkable, and it makes no difference what she hits, the highest U.S. official on the White Star Line said. God himself could not sink the ship. When she was rescued, Mrs. Ball, Dr. Bateman's sister, said this is what happened aboard the Titanic. On Sunday, April the 14th, 1912, Dr. Bateman conducted a spontaneous worship service aboard the ship. It was the only one that we had, she said. And he concluded the service by calling passengers to give their heart to Jesus Christ. The closing hymn was his favorite, "Nearer, My God, to Thee." One passenger said that Dr. Bateman was the most popular man on the Titanic. That very night at 11:45 p.m., an iceberg ripped a 300-foot strip off of the steel hull of the ship. Mrs. Ball said there was no time to dress, and she went onto the boat's deck in her nightgown, feeling the Arctic cold. Dr. Bateman found her and held her back, and he took off his overcoat and wrapped it around her shoulders. And he escorted her along with other women to one of the boats, and he said, "Don't be nervous, Annie. This will be a test of our faith. I must stay and let the women go. If we never meet again on this earth, we'll meet again in heaven." And as the boat lowered, Robert stepped to the railing and threw me his silk handkerchief. "Put that around your neck," he said. "You'll catch cold." Just imagine him thinking of such a little thing in a time like that, she wrote. After he saw all of them safely off, all the women saw safely off the sinking ship, he collected about 50 men on the stern of the ship and told them that they needed to prepare for death. He led them in praying the Lord's Prayer. The curator of the Jacksonville Maritime Museum said that Dr. Bateman and another man were purported to be the ones who opened some of the steerage passages doors to allow the poorest and the most unfortunate of the passengers to escape. One of them was a teenager named Yamilia Ridd and her brother Elias, who traveled as third-class passengers aboard the Titanic. They survived the wreck and, oddly enough, in later life became residents of Jacksonville. Elias said, "This old man saw us, and he climbed up the ladder to get me, and he carried me safely down the shaky ladder, and he put me in a crowded lifeboat. And then he went back up, and he got Yamila, and she was hard to manage, but he got her into a lifeboat just as it was pulling away from the sinking ship. Yamila thought that she might have been one of the last passengers on the very last boat. She only remembered standing on the deck, panic-stricken, while water started to engulf the ship, and some old man put her in a lifeboat." No one knows if this was Dr. Bateman, but it would have been something that he would have done. Mrs. Ball's lifeboat remained near the Titanic, and she believed that it was him who persuaded the band to play "Nearer, My God, to Thee" in the Titanic's last moment. Of 2,207 passengers, only 705 survived. 10 days after the disaster and the sinking of the Titanic, Robert Bateman's widow received a letter from her dead husband. He had written it on the shipboard and mailed it in Ireland, where they had stopped for a few passengers. "I feel like my trip to Bristol has not been in vain. God has singularly blessed me. We had a glorious revival. It was the time of my life." He had a nephew who received a postcard mailed from Ireland from Dr. Bateman on that same day. "Tom, if this ship goes to the bottom, I shall not be there. I shall be up yonder. Just think of that. When the family pried open Bateman's rolled up desk in his office in Jacksonville, they found that he had set his affairs in order, and he had written a poem on a card and left it on top of his papers. And it said this: "Do you shudder as you picture all the horrors of that hour? Ah, but Jesus was beside me, and he sustained me by his power. He came himself to meet me in that way so hard to tread, and with Jesus' arm to cling to, could I have one doubt or dread?" Whatever it is that people like Robert Bateman have in life and in death, I want it.
To the